Morning, folks. This is Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden. We're live at 102.9 FM, whistlefm.com, formerly Whistle Radio. Sharing the Burden believes in life recovery. We are a life recovery group, and we follow the 12 steps of sharing the burden to support the hurting. All are welcome at our meetings. We hold weekly meetings in several locations. Check out sharingtheburden.ca to find the meeting closest to you, or start your own. And we need one in Stouffville soon. Good morning and welcome back, Sue, and welcome, Matthew.
Well,
a friend of Sue's, I would say. Am I safe on that one?
Yeah. Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
We're good. I'm well. I'm well.
Good.
Good to have you guys, and especially this morning, fighting all that snow and so on. Matthew from way out in the East End, and you from a little way out in the East End, and not quite so far. And Matt said it wasn't that bad. We got up this morning in Markham to an amount of snow that's unbelievable.
I don't think you have as much as we do, actually.
I don't
we
know.
Have, I think in Pickering, we have way more. Sorry, just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying, we beat the record on
you
that.
You did until today.
It's snowing actually a little bit right now.
Midnight. To clean things out. And actually, with me, I'm the last house on a street, and it's one way going out past my house. So, in other words, the big trucks that plow have to do a right, and everything from the whole street ends up on Scott's.
Your driveway.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Scott's
by the time you
driveway.
Finish actually doing your driveway, the snowplow comes and blocks it all in again. Yeah.
Brutal. So anyway, we're here. So, and Matthew, the first time on, so really good to have you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here.
I like to get some youth on the program, too.
Yeah.
And Sue recognizes that, and you may not feel that young, you know, depending on how you've lived your life. But to me, anyway, you're very young.
Well, just by physical appearance, he's much younger than us, Scott, right?
Okay, well, we'll leave that alone.
Okay.
So, you can call Sue Mom, and
just
be
it's
your
okay,
brother.
I got enough kids.
I'll be your older ancient brother. Anyway, we're talking about the powerlessness and the unpredictability that surrounds this step that we're working on. And folks, for those who don't know, we work the step that corresponds with the month. So step one's in January, step 12 is in December, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In our life recovery devotional, every page has a day on it, day 1 through 30. And those days represent the date for us. We're missing the 31st, but we worked around that. So we're day 29 and step one. And the title, I believe, is what is it? When Heroes Lose, and all about unpredictability in my estimation. So when I throw a word out like unpredictability, does it represent anything, we'll say, in your youth, either one of you? And I'll give you a quick example. When I was young, I could never tell whether Dad would be home, whether he'd be loaded or, you know, driving into the wall or whatever, you know, and that sort of unpredictability kind of set the direction for my life. Now, a whole bunch of stuff came from that, but so that unpredictability was something that I knew was very difficult to deal with. And to this day, I have only found that the recognition of powerlessness allows me to cope comfortably with that situation. So, what's your take on that, Sue or Matt, either one of you?
I'm going to let Matt go first on that one. I have other thoughts that are rolling around my head. We'll let him open up the...
So with unpredictability, you know, when I first started drinking, using drugs when I was a little younger than I am now, there was a certain amount of predictability to the night, right? I would kind of know what my night was going to look like, and it was going to be fun. And then eventually, I lost that ability. And every time I picked up, it was unpredictable as to what the consequences would be, what would happen, or even how long I was going to be using for or drinking for. So after a period of time, I couldn't predict what was going to happen, but for some reason, for reasons yet obscure, I'd lost the power of choice, whether or not I was going to pick up or not.
Yeah. The truth of the addict. You know, I didn't know when I'd stop, how I'd stop, what I'd do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So your own life obviously becomes unpredictable in the using situation. I understand that. Sue, just over to you for a sec. Go back to your youth. How predictable were the people, family people, people you loved? Like, did Dad come to to your sports events? You know, was he a backup?
Sports events? I never played sports. No, no, I understand
what
you're saying.
You played.
You know what? It's funny. I wasn't going to go on that train of thought, but I'm going to go where you're kind of leading me right now, Scott.
I know.
You know what? I know for me. It's hard to talk about my dad. My dad passed away recently, so it's really hard for me to talk about these truths, and these are the truth from my childhood. But, you know, there was a lot of conditions. You know, a little girl is always seeking approval and wanting to be loved and accepted by their peers, right? Their parents, right? And, you know, there was a lot of conditions on that love around my father. If you behaved or did things a certain way, I would bestow attention on you. But if you didn't, you were going to feel my wrath. And so, you know, there was not, you know, I was uncertain. But of course, as a little girl, I was constantly seeking to get that need and that approval from him and not knowing whether I was going to get it based on, you know, my behaviors or what I was doing.
Okay, now bringing that up to when you were using, whatever. Now it doesn't matter, you know, who you are, what you are, whether you're an addict or not, or how much of that you ever talk about or not. When did you feel that you were out of control, or how did that come about?
Well, you know what. You know, I could tell tons and tons of stories to qualify as me being an alcoholic and addict. Without a doubt, you knew without a doubt that when I was practicing and when I was indulging, that there was a lot of chaos in my life. There was a lot of consequences as a result of doing some of the drugs and the alcohol that I did. But, you know, when I think about the unpredictable amount about it, you know, when I'm practicing, you know, I always say addiction's like being on a train. And you're going down this train, this locomotive, and it's getting steam, and the wheels are going faster, but you're going on the wrong track, down the wrong street, or in a car going down the one-way street. You know that there's going to be mayhem. You know that that train is going to derail. And despite you knowing that that train is going to derail, it didn't matter what the consequences were, because I lost the power of choice of whether I was going to use or not, right? And, you know, I'm going to kind of spin it off a little bit. You know, when I'm thinking about powerlessness, you know, and I'm going to talk about unpredictability in my life today, right? You know, I'm in recovery today. I'm not drinking and drugging. Doesn't mean I don't have powerlessness and unpredictability in my life. I definitely live with that on a daily basis, and it's what I do with it that's most important. The unpredictability in my life can pop up in all kinds of sorts of ways. When I think of step one, it talks about me being powerless. I have an allergy of the body with an obsession of the mind, right? And so, you know, if I'm not using this, you know, it tells me in the big book clearly that the crux of my problem is in my thinking, right? I have this obsession constantly. And, you know, today in recovery, I don't necessarily think about drugs all the time, but, you know, if I start obsessing over certain situations in my life, I can obsess them and I can entertain all kinds of crazy thoughts in my life, right? And if I believe those thoughts, which are always fear-based, then my emotion that gets attached to that thought is very unpredictable. Right? Because if you've done something to me and I'm hurt by you by in any way and I'm obsessing over it in my mind and rehearsing over, well, Scott said this and Scott didn't do that, or Scott did this or whatever. And then what happens is I have fear. I have fear around that because my biggest fear is being rejected, right? Because I had that conditional love for my father. And then if you reject me, or I'm having those thoughts going, which are fear based, and then what happens is my response to that can be very unpredictable. And so for me, you know, thank goodness that I do have the 12 steps. I have all of the 12 steps. I don't have to stay in that powerlessness. You know, I can bring that stuff to God, and I can, you know, I call it lamentation. I can cry and I can pray and I say, help me with this, right? And he gives me the right perspective on that situation, right? And he says, Sue, you're being fearful. Like, I'm not saying God's audibly talking to me, but, you know, you're being fearful for this reason. And that never really happened. And you're playing, I don't want to swear on the radio, but I do want to swear. But, you know, my mind screws with my mind. You know? And I can't believe this crap that goes on in my mind. And that's where the obsession comes. And sooner or later, if I live in that sick place in my mind, in my thinking, my thoughts are not sound. Time and time again, I'll be driven back again, whether it be the drugs, whether it be the alcohol, whether it be the food, whether it be some kind of obsession, I'll be driven time and time again unless I have a way to deal with that stuff.
Matt, you had a thought.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Scott, because you had mentioned about a variety of different things that one can be addicted to, right? Whether it be acting out behaviors, alcohol, or other substances. And then, you know, Sue, you had talked about the train analogy, right? And oftentimes, I think, especially dealing with step one, is, you know, what's my DOC? What's my drug of choice, right? Whether it be alcohol or whatnot. And I think that in some fellowships, that can be a problem, right? Because of singleness of purpose. For me, I feel like, you know, addiction is addiction. It doesn't matter what you're addicted to. And for me, I like to use the analogy, it's like a vehicle, what I'm addicted to, right? If I'm doing cocaine or smoking crack, maybe I'm in a Ferrari in terms of speed, as to how fast I'm going to hit that brick wall at the end of the line, right? As opposed to, you know,
smoking weed,
or if I'm drinking a six pack a day, maybe I'm in a Ford Focus, right? I'm still going to hit that brick wall, but I'm going a little bit slower.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, for me, that was a big part of my step one. Because I definitely knew I had a problem with drugs and had, you know, but I couldn't accept that a problem with alcohol because I didn't see the effects of what I was doing right away. It was slower than it was easier to look at the drugs and say, okay, well, this is a big problem right now. So I would drink, and yet the drinking would keep leading me back to the drugs or other things. So when I think of step one, I think that, you know, about that powerlessness and the unmanageability, I don't think it really matters what substance you're using.
Yeah,
it's what's displayed, right? Whether it be acting out behaviors like gambling or sex conduct.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Or drugs or booze.
Yeah, but they all kind of come in together, and I think a lot of us have a lot of them, as a matter of fact. But my estimation, it comes down to one thing in the end. It's control. Whether it's self-control, control of others. If I had control of myself, I would obviously not have to pick up a drink or whatever I do, you know. So, you know, in the end, and I've played with this forever now, in the end, it's really the codependency that, you know, that hunger for control, first of all, of myself, and then when I fail at that, which we all do, and then it's that recognition here that, you know, that makes us powerful in that we can, you know, we can access other power, whether it's spiritual power, whatever you believe in, or so on. So to access power, you have to admit powerlessness.
You
know your powerlessness. You know things are unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rubber meets the road when that control is
doesn't work no more?
Out of your hand. Yeah.
Well, when you hit
to take that first drink, that first shot, that first needle, whatever it is, you know, how, and if you guys, for the audience out there, can say something about how you would deal with not taking that first drink, not going to that, you know, ecstasy party or whatever. Like, what do you do to not do that first thing, okay? Like, and that's program. And it sounds fundamental, but for those out there who are stuck in that rut and think there's no hope.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, step one is, you know, Matthew is powerless over drugs and alcohol, and the big part, too, is that my life is unmanageable. So, the big book, for those of you who are listening, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me that lack of power is my dilemma. I don't have power. So your question is to, how do I not go and do drugs or drink? And the reason is, it's the 12 steps. And my power doesn't come from my sponsor, or from going to meetings.
No.
You know, it's living and working the 12 steps, all of the 12 steps, which was alluded to by Sue, right? So I have to tap into a power that's, you know, greater than myself, which I call Creator God.
Sure.
Doesn't matter.
How do you do that, though, Matthew?
How do I do that?
How do you go from, I'd like to, you know, to...
To use?
Oh. Yeah.
No, yeah, I really, you know, I got that. I get the cravings happening. It's in my gut.
Yeah.
You know, like,
for me, it was a process. It wasn't as simple as just going
getting
to...
Getting up one day, yeah.
Yeah, just getting up
I'm
one day.
I'm not going to use today because I laughed. Sorry, I don't mean to... When you said, how do you decide the first day after whatever that I'm not going to use that? And I laughed because...
How do you not do it? I mean, even if you got 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
What step do you take? What is the initiation?
You know,
do you do? Do you phone somebody? Do you, the 12 steps is, you know, and the traditions and concepts. I mean, it's everything.
For me, today, after having gone through most of the action steps, four through nine, I live mostly in step 10, 11, and 12. More so 11 and 12, you know, which is sought through prayer and meditation.
Yeah.
I meditate and pray daily.
Yeah.
I have a pretty good regimen of that. In step 12, which is, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be sponsoring guys in the program. It can be, for me, in multitude of different ways that I can do that. anything that is self-sacrificing of my time and giving to other people unselfishly is step 12 for me. So I hate doing it sometimes, right? Because I'm by nature, the book tells me I'm a selfish, self-centered person. I can certainly relate to that. So I go out of my way to do the opposite of those things. So personally, I'm involved with a bunch of different service work. For Southern Ontario Cocaine Anonymous. So I do a lot of different work with that. And I tell people, you know, I do all the service work, not because I'm a great guy, but because I'm a sick person. I have to do that to stay sober.
Yeah. And it's right. It's the right thing to do. And it works. It helps others, and you gain your sobriety. So,
absolutely.
You've got some thoughts too, Sue, but I'm going to ask you to hold them so we can pay some bills here and get our friend Jay to take us out. Jason, what's happening?
Yeah, I think it's time to pay those bills, Scott. We'll be back here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.